And now I will invite back Ari and also Hannah and Sara on stage, and I bring a chair. And what I would like to do now is to ask Ari, Hannah and Sara to respond or comment on one item each that have been mentioned by our commentators. And then we open up for discussion with all our participants in the seminar. So if there is one single, there are a lot of them, of course, but if you could pick one each, start with Hannah. Is there anything that you would like to comment what you heard from our commentators?
Yes, thank you. I would actually love to lump together some ideas that were put forward by both Annika and Shannon. See, I am very happy to have been working on this report. It's been a pleasure to do it. And in particular, I am indebted to my co-authors for the Division of Labor, which put me in charge of doing the private sector interviews. So I have been, and the report is very big, and it's looking at a number of issues, and so the private sector interviews were sort of intervened in the rest of the information, and so it's not really clear what we did. So I'd like to add that sort of to the discussion. And what we did was we talked to a number of Scandinavian companies. We talked to Löfbergs Lila, Tetra Laval, IKEA, both the foundation and the company, H&M, Star for Life, Ericsson, and Maersk. And it was hard to get a hold of them. In some cases, it took 3 months for waiting for an interview. In other cases, I offered to drive these people to the airport. I'd take anything to get 10 minutes of their time to find out what's going on. And I have been using this report as a crowbar to getting the information. It was so worth it. It is awesome. The initiatives that are going on are nothing but mind-boggling, and they are not only here as a lump, you know, of companies working on the private side, and there's the development side, but they're very driven, and they're using their platforms for making a better place, not just for their companies, but for their environment and for the people they run into. They're very mature in their thinking. They're not coming to CEDA or to development agencies saying, hey, give me money, I have this idea. But they're really mature. They're always adding the same amount of money in there too as they're getting. But the initiative is on their side. The work that they do in their everyday work is awesome. They have a lot of expertise and before going in. And they really, 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 in terms of being mature, they're looking for a way to make sure that the work that they do is scalable, it's useful, and that they have professional results. And so in many cases, these are silos of people sitting there trying to reinvent the wheel because they want to make sure that they have great evaluations, and how do they do that? And they don't have access to that information, but they want to make sure. In some cases, they're working with CEDA. In some cases, they're working with other development agencies, both or just doing it by themselves. And they're very different. They're the ones that have been going on for a long time. So Tetra Pak has been doing this for 50 years. Maersk, they've been doing it for a year and a half. And they have their sustainability area needs to be profitable within the next 3 years, or they're going to be kicked out. They're just a part of the company in general.
I guess I need to continue with Sara, because we have just a few minutes left. So Sara.
Go ahead, Sara.
Yes, sorry. I wanted to pick up one point then. I wanted to pick up on the issue of mutual benefits, which I obviously is a key issue in this area, and just to emphasize that, of course, there's nothing wrong with mutual benefits, and it's very hard to think that you would engage a partner in a long-term engagement without them having something come out of it. So the issue is more what principle is the leading one. And I think this is what you were saying, all three of you, is basically that development has to be the key principle. And this also relates back to what Ari was presenting on the risks for tying aid. I think there is also a more, I'd say, innocent way of tying aid unnecessarily. That is, if you decide that our countries, without saying that you have to buy our services or our goods, but you're saying our countries have an expertise in whatever area. This is a very attractive argument, I think, as well. We are good at environment, we are good at infrastructure, we are good at these things. It's an attractive and not so wrong argument to make. The problem is that if all donors end up doing only the things that they are good at, rather than looking at what the countries really need, then there's going to be an awful lot of gaps, I think. And so this is kind of another principle for, I think, the OECD's work to look at. Thank you.
Thanks. Aria, if you have one comment.
Let me pick up on what Annika said about the particular role of the Leadership for Development group. I think that is something that we, of course, could have and might have emphasized more, but I think it also points to one of the important roles for the donor agency, and that could be perhaps an even more important role as a coordinator of activities in the private sector, because what that group represents is really a platform for discussion and sharing of experiences, and also a place where SIDA can bring in its experience and expertise in these areas. It would be great if that kind of initiative could go beyond the largest Swedish multinationals. I mean, if one could make an SME platform of the same type, that would be wonderful.
Thanks for that. Now, I will open up for questions, comments to all our panelists, our commentators, as well as the author. So please introduce yourself and put your question, if there's a specific one or if it's a general one, and we will have a joint discussion. So anyone would like to pose a question? Yes, please, over here.
Hi, thank you so much. My name is Anna Ron. I work here at SIDA,
private sector development specialist and market specialist here. I think it's a very well-written and interesting report, and that it brings out some quite useful conclusions and recommendations as well. I wanted to make a comment. I think one of the recommendations is about learning more about what works and summarizing and, of course, getting access to better statistics. And I wanted to mention that here at SIDA, we have an assignment in the letter of appropriation this year to analyze and present our work with private sector collaboration since 2009. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. So that would be a quite useful complement to your report, because what we've done is to have a pre-study that's been done by Mikael Söderbeck, who's sitting next to me, and he's digged up a lot of statistics and a lot of sort of a compilation of everything that's been done in this area of private sector collaboration. And I think we also chose to have a slightly broader definition, which I think is one of the aspects in your report, that you also discussed that. The aspect of what do you talk about when you talk about private sector collaboration? And I think some of the main conclusions that we've been ourselves developed is that there are really clear success factors and risks that you can see already. And of course, we need to learn more about that. But we see opportunities for more inclusive business models, especially working with the small and micro enterprises. And I would actually really strengthen what our chief economist has said, that you need to really focus on the development problem. And also seeing the private sector as an actor alongside other actors and not start with a method or instrument. And I think that's something that you've said, that these instruments can be a complement. But it, in my view, and I think in our view, shouldn't be seen like that. It should be a way of reaching the development results. And you can really, based on what we've learned, you you can really use them in changing market systems and working in a systemic way. So I think if you are interested in complementing this report with some experiences from CEDA and the available independent evaluations that has been done, which we were unable to look at because we used a slightly broader definition, you would be able to also sort of have the statistics and more knowledge about what has worked for us. But what we can see is that, I mean, in the past 20 years that we've worked with private sector collaboration in various ways, lessons has been learned and certain things that we've done has really made a big impact on poor people's lives. Thanks.
Yes, over here. Two lines. Please.
Hello, my name is Sofia Falk. I've been working in a project together with Swedfund called Women for Growth. But I have a question. I don't know if we have an answer for that, but I lack the overall vision. Like in 20, 30 years, what will have been the unique thing that Sweden has accomplished in engaging the private sector in actually, you know, do things that do maximize their profit, but also combat poverty. In relation to other countries and other, you know, financiers, what do we want to stand for? If we are an innovative country, what could be the thing that, you know, a first mover advantage in the way we do things together with the private sector, or actually, you know, encourage them to do it anyways, even though they don't get any finance aid? Do we have such a vision? What will differentiate Sweden from other countries in how we engage in this issue?
I think that is a good one to start off with. Annika, maybe you could.
Should I listen
to our commentaries of some non-Swedes also, what you think Sweden could do, and also the team.
I think Sweden has a really important role to play, and we, you know, compared to many other countries, I mean, Sweden's aid is untied. We really have the opportunity to really put the country, the development results that we want to reach, the development goals of the country's interest first and center. And I think we also, Sweden also stands for a lot of values that are important. I think we really can promote the sustainability agenda in all its aspects, gender, all the sort of important issues that are difficult. I want to come back to sort of the role of platforms and convening partners together. I think that's an important part of this vision, sort of bringing actors together, learning from each other, and where a donor can really be a broker or getting things to happen. You know, when we've been working with thinking about how can we get more infrastructure investments off the ground, and we've been talking to pension funds, many of them say that we don't know anything about your partner countries. We don't know these markets. They're too far away. We're too experienced. There's a lot of knowledge that we as donors have that we can bring to other actors to promote development. So, but those are a couple of things. Trying to think what else I want to put in there. Maybe let somebody else.
What could Sweden provide? What is Sweden's value added?
In 2030.
Yes, in 2030.
It's actually, I would say, from what I've heard the last few days and what we've discussed, the review team all together, and what Shannon said earlier today, Sweden being the island, I think it's from that perspective. Well, not floating away, but sort of the last flag standing. I mean, I think in terms of working with the private sector and innovating and raising more private capital and the innovation and know-how, etc. I think maybe in 2030 Sweden will have the examples that have stood the strongest for development benefits, for effective development cooperation, for really getting the gamut of impacts, environmental, social, all of them. That's my guess.
Do you agree, Shannon? Do you agree on that?
Yeah, I would have just added maybe the test of time factor, right? I mean, the reality is for other countries, you've got the dual objective of your own commercial interest as well as development objectives, and it's partnership for the sake of partnership. Not the results aren't necessarily your starting point, although you want to achieve good results, but... Yeah.
Can yes, I add one thing?
On, and then we have
because I also think, you know, we can stand for holistic view, that sort of seeing this as one part. I mean, I want to come back to what where I ended. I mean, what's going to really drive development in our partner countries is getting resource mobilization in the countries, taxes. So sort of thinking in a holistic way, I think, is something that Sweden could contribute with, and working in all different working in the different areas.
Yes,
here.
Please.
Oh. Yes, hello, I'm Lena Algerin from Swedfund that we have been talking about today as well. And, you know, what I've heard and learned today, and I can also see how well Swedfund do fit in the private sector development in these countries where we operate. We talked about one important thing, job creation. And that is what Swedfund does. We invest in companies. We are the development finance institutions, and we invest in companies in the poorer countries. And as you also noticed, the biggest part of our portfolio is in Africa. And we also, when we do invest, the principles for investing are, you know, impact on society, sustainability, and financial viability. And they go together, and that's what we look at every investment to see that they also will remain and continue when Swedfund leaves the partnership. And for us, of course, it's a precondition. We can't do anything without the partnership with the private sector. We invest in the private sector together with private sector companies. And I agree, it's not just about money, because what we also add in our investments is know-how on sustainability, on environmental, social, and governance issues in our investments. And in doing so, I think we can leave a sort of a continuous footprint on development in these countries. So I'm glad to hear, I've heard it mentioned, and I certainly agree that we can make a big difference from our side in investment.
Ari, you'd like to comment on this?
Yeah, on the question of where should we expect to see the impact of Swedish aid in 15, 20 years, I think Swedfund is very interesting. I'm working to some extent with IFU in Denmark, which is the sister organization, which has different principles and a much stronger emphasis on the Danish interest in all of these projects. And what you see is that they're able to grow much faster, their turnover is much bigger, they engage more companies and all of those things. But it's not clear whether the development impact is all that much bigger. I mean, they do the same old thing that they've always done, and they will continue to do so. Whereas I think that the stronger development focus in Swedfund forces Swedfund to become more innovative over time, to find ways and to find new kinds of partnerships. And I think it's that sort of additional, some might call it restriction, but perhaps calling it an additional objective that is going to force us to go beyond business as usual.
Good, thanks. Now, a number of hands are up, so please put your question or comment short, and then I will lump together a number of them. So start.
Okay. I'm going to stand up because I'm sitting too far back. My name is Lena Eriksson Åsevid. I have a background in development banking from the European Investment Bank, and I was also the team leader of the team that was running the Innovations Against Poverty program that you have mentioned in your report. So I'm commenting from both of those perspectives. In EIB, I worked with the ACP region a lot in Africa, Southern Africa, with the initiatives that the bank funds there. I'd like to comment on a couple of the risks and challenges that you highlight in your report. And one of them is that you're saying that these initiatives have an issue of reaching the most vulnerable. I would like to say that IIP, of course, reached both slum dwellers in Kenya, rural farmers in Nepal, Ghana, and Mozambique. And I would expect that those would qualify as the most vulnerable. But I think it might be a question of, you know, finding defining who the most vulnerable are. Because I look around my, here in the room, and there are not many representatives from these countries. But I'm sure that if there were, they could probably tell you that even the most vulnerable tend to spend a lot of their disposable income on things that could be done more effectively and more efficiently. So simply by providing them with goods and services that are adapted to their needs, you can have an impact on groups that might not be the most extreme. I've actually worked for UNHCR in a refugee camp in Kenya as well, and in Somalia. And of course, those groups are difficult to reach with
Thank
others
you.
Than
question,
the name.
We'll
no, just
I have
another.
To yeah. I'm sorry, we are running out. So.
Yeah, just one more comment.
Yeah, very short.
Very short.
10 seconds.
Bridging cultures. If you're going to bring in private sector, I think there will need to be a question of maybe finding a set, slightly different set of rules that will meet the private sector halfway, and not simply say that they will have to abide by the rules and regulations that aid is using.
Okay, thanks. Now, mid-room, two questions over there.
That's a good point, actually.
Three, four. Short. Quick. Run.
Hi, I'm Henrik Ribe from SIDA. Annika mentioned that job creation and proper growth is one of the key issues, of course, and we can't agree more. But that's also probably coming from local companies, and from in the local economy, working in the national environment. Now, just a question to everyone here. Do you see that PPDPs are really the best way of doing that, or should we work with other means to get there?
Good, thanks. Pass on the mic, I think, more or less everyone on this room.
Yeah, thank you, Mattias Forsberg from Rädda Barnen, Save the Children. First, I just want to say that large parts of civil society has evolved to work way beyond the watchdog and accountability role. That's one part. But we are really constructively partnering so that our knowledge can benefit the business understanding and also provide concrete solutions. And if you add our partners around the world, we have well over 100,000 people in 125 countries. So there's quite a lot of knowledge also outside the formal donor community. I have a quick question on the network thing. It's a good network. It's not the first one. It's come. They have come and gone. And there are plenty of other networks already in place where businesses do share a lot of concrete experience. Many of them are also in developing countries already in place. So my question is, can we please be a bit less colonial, less focused on OECD-based companies, but rather use the enormous potential of the local business networks in Kenya and Zambia, places like that, where the dialogue on development really is much more mature than anything I've heard from any business representative here in Sweden. So we have a lot to learn from elsewhere.
Yes, please pass on the mic to Anders.
Anders Jonsson, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Trade. We try to facilitate and encourage particular SMEs to enter the new global markets. And looking at the challenges, UNCTAD made an assessment of the needs, requirements, indicating that $3.9 trillion is required to achieve the goals annually, and the current level is $1.4 trillion, so it's a gap of $2.5 trillion a year. And that means that the private sector has an enormous role to play, but to be able to harness the potential of the private sector, there is also a need to create a conducive investment market in the countries concerned. And there I think that ODA has an important role to play to facilitate, and particularly to create the regulations. For instance, to encourage ICT, private companies, you need a regulatory system to create a taxation system that's correct, and you have to have a land system where Swedish public institutions would have a key role to play. So I would rather suggest that another project you may embark on would be to facilitate the collaboration with the public institutions in Sweden, in Sweden's development cooperation. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, a final round for the panelists. We have six questions, six panelists, pick and choose. I hope we can address all of those questions. And one question that I think is coming back and forth and also discussed earlier by the panelists, the role of finance. I think someone mentioned it's not finance who attracts private sector to go together with development cooperation or ODA. Someone else said finance is the key. So maybe you could address the finance as well. So we start from Naida and then go all the way through to Ari. Final 1 minute each, please.
Okay. I wanted to pick on the PPDP's question, whether it's the best way of engaging local companies. I think they could be. Bigger, maybe bigger domestic companies. I mean, local companies are all sizes, right? But the I guess you'd need to have you would need to have a extensive system in place to, or a decent system in place to actually start them off and get them going and build them in country. You know, if you want to engage local partners, you have to really invest in the time to engage local partners.
Annika,
I also want to comment on the local the local private sector. I think, I mean, like Anders was saying, creating an enabling environment is going to be crucial, and their donors have a continued important role to play. Getting financing in place, that there's liquidity, that companies can get loans. There, here, I think guarantees could be an instrument, or they are an instrument. But also that small companies then have access to markets, trade, regional trade is going to be important. Creating an inducive environment for that. Then I think it's a great idea to learn from local business networks and build those and strengthen those. So yeah.
How about vulnerable groups? Would you like to address that?
Vulnerable. Well, I think when we do all this, when we work with trying to promote jobs, we always have. I mean, it has to be inclusive. It has to include people living in poverty. So thinking of how we construct these corporations and how we what kind of projects we support. I mean, that's key. That has to come front and center.
Thanks, Shannon.
Yeah, I suppose that just taking everything that's been said, the reality is we're talking about a toolbox. You know, no one's saying that we should only work with Swedish companies, right, or only work with local, or you know, not focus on the enabling environment. I mean, it's a toolbox. It needs to be seen in that way. And we need to ensure that we have the know-how to know which tool to use in which context to get the right results. And I think that's where the evaluation piece is incredibly important. And so, yeah, I think I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
Zara?
Yes. I think it was very well said by Shanna now, and also that we there's much to do for ODA in private sector development, but JDIs, what we call JDIs, may not be the best in all circumstances. So there are many other areas, and conducive business environment, I think, is absolutely one of them. The other thing is on the vulnerable groups. It is true that the poor are a very important consumer group in many countries, and we should not reduce them to something else. And also many of the challenge funds have resulted in projects or ideas that have helped the poor people. But it is another thing to involve the poor in the very job creation, to involve them as entrepreneurs in these programs. And the challenges there, I'm glad to hear that there are some successful examples, but the challenges there from the evidence that we see are much greater, and we need to think a lot about how that process can be done.
Thanks. Anna?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of information that needs to be gathered. I think we're starting out on this, and we're learning as we go. But I also think that it's just as important to make sure that information is available to everyone who would find it useful. So not just gathering the information, but making sure that we disseminate it in a right way. And speaking of which, if anyone here has a channel for me to disseminate all this information about the goings-on in these companies, I would very much like to hear that.
And my final word is yours, Ari.
Yes, we need $3.9 trillion per year. ODA will provide only a small share of that. Yes, that's true. But let's think optimistically. If we spend that trillion that could come through ODA well, it's going to create that business environment that will encourage the companies to put in the rest. I think that is key. So you know, use the money we have in the best possible way and things will happen.
Thanks a lot. Timekeeping is an art. Our 90 minutes is out. Give me a hand with the applause for the panel.